welcome to the latest edition of the RBC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. My name's Mark Cleesby, and today I'm joined by Kim Whittlestone and Jeff Bullock from the Live Centre at the RBC. And they're going to be talking to us today about the role of the Live Centre in education at the RBC, and also about one of their particular projects, Vet Connect. Okay, so welcome, Kim and Jeff. Perhaps, Kim, you could start off by giving us an introduction to what the Live Centre actually is.
Okay, so Live Centre is actually a centre for veterinary education. It was established back in 2005-06 with some government money. The government was looking to set up centres for excellence in teaching and learning, and they actually ended up funding 74 of those centres. Mm-hmm. And the Live Centre is essentially a group of vets and researchers and developers and also the Clinical Skills Centre and the Clinical Skills tutors.
So quite a mixture of different expertise then.
Yeah, it's very much a multidisciplinary team, and that's quite a powerful setup in a lot of ways for an educational research group.
Is this the only centre of its type then for veterinary education specifically?
It's the only centre that was set up under this funding for veterinary
right.
education. Yeah, that's right. There are a number of others in medicine, and also there are centres for excellence in things like work-based learning as well, but we're the only veterinary one.
Okay, so what are the sort of principal areas of activity then that are going on in the Live Centre just now?
At the moment, we've got three main areas of activity. So educational research is a very strong theme for the whole centre. But we also act as an interface, if you like, between the educational literature, which is obviously quite vast, and the very busy clinical staff in the RBC.
Right.
And then the third area of activity that Live undertakes is designing and developing educational programmes and supporting staff in doing that too.
Okay, so perhaps you could give us some examples then of the sorts of educational research that are going on at the moment.
Yeah, okay, so one area of research is trying to improve our understanding, our background understanding, our sort of grounding research in, for example, why do people want to become vets? So Jane Tomlin's doing some interesting grounding research in that area. We're also looking at the undergraduates that are in the course, how they actually approach their learning. I can talk a bit about that later on. That's an area of particular interest of mine. And then there's another area of exploring adult learning and the motivations for undertaking CPD courses that Vicky Dale, who's in the centre, is also taking on. So those are three examples of the sort of trying to improve our understanding. But then we've also got projects where we do developmental work and more sort of action-oriented research, if you like. So we have a link with Liverpool University and the vet school there. Carol Gray there is doing some interesting activity with communication skills and research in that whole area.
Uh-huh.
And then in connection with e-media here at the RBC, we're exploring some of the existing tool sets that are out there. So, for example, podcasting, which of course is very close to your heart, but also other tools such as wikis like Wikipedia that is used a lot.
Mm.
Can we use those tools more effectively in education? And can we use other tools that are coming out, like Google are releasing tools all the time that allow for collaborative learning? So that's another area of developmental work. But then probably the most well-known, I suppose, in the Live Centre is the work that Sarah Bailey brought from Glasgow with her PhD on haptic simulation. A lot of people know about the haptic cow,
right.
Which is all about simulating palpation and exploring how effective that is and how far we can take that.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously something like haptic cow is, I guess, specifically for students, but a lot of the other initiatives going on would have equal applicability to CPD for qualified vets and so on.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in fact, the palpation you can take out into, I mean, actually one of the interesting studies that Sarah's done is looking at the differences between palpation skills of undergraduate students and vets in practice. and found clear differences in that, those skill sets. So then we start to understand and look at how we move undergraduates from where they are to where they need to be.
Okay, so that sounds like quite a valuable additional resource then to improve the skills. I guess sort of one of the problems you sort of alluded to in sort of improving the educational achievement at the college generally is through the fact that so many of the academics and clinicians especially are obviously very busy with other activities. So, I mean, presumably, therefore, you see part of your role as trying to facilitate their work and make their life easier.
Yeah, that's we certainly need to come in with that understanding. We have to be quite careful of the balance between providing a service but also being a research group, and anybody doing research would appreciate that you can't go too far into the service delivery domain without your research suffering. But clearly part of what we're trying to understand is how we can design systems and how we can support teachers and clinicians in what they're doing, and a big part of what they're doing is actually very effective, but also they're extremely busy. So we can't really add to their load without taking something away.
Okay, so that's quite a good introduction then to the sort of general areas of work that are going on over there. I guess one of the things that's involved in university teaching these days, and especially thinking the long term towards making good vets ultimately, is the concept of improving learning methods. And the word that sort of keeps coming up a lot is the concept of deep learning. Now, what exactly is this? How are you sort of approaching ways of improving this in students?
We need to think about deep learning really as an approach to a task. And it's very much about when you're approaching a learning task, whether you're trying to achieve a personal understanding, which would be a component of a deep approach, or actually whether you're trying to memorize without perhaps the meaning, which would tend to be called a surface approach. Mm-hmm. And many researchers have been looking at this over the past 40 years and more. There was an interesting study in 1976 in Sweden, and what they did was they gave students a text and asked them to read it and told them they would be tested on the text afterwards. Mm. What they found was that some students seemed to get it. They understood what the text was about and they could answer the questions. And they were seen to take a deep approach to their understanding. But some students looked at the text and knew they were going to be tested and tried to question spot, if you like. And they tried to memorize bits that they thought were going to be asked. And actually they did quite poorly. So that was one of the first studies looking at or finding out about the different approaches that students might take to the same task.
Yeah.
And since then, there've been a number of studies that extended that work and looked at it in different domains and different subject areas, but also not just looking at text in all domains. And Noel Entwistle at Edinburgh is one of the leaders in that research, and we've been using some of his work because he developed actually a questionnaire, an inventory that allows us to look at student populations and also see how the population of students is changing in their approach across the course. So one of the interesting things about collecting that data for the RBC is that a lot of people felt that students coming in from A-levels were very driven to a surface approach. They were driven to memorise, and that's what A-levels and GCSEs had given them is a way to pass exams. Uh-huh. And that gradually throughout the course of the RBC, they would move away from memorisation and more to a deeper conceptual understanding. And what the data we've collected is showing is actually that there is very little change. But I'm not saying that all the students are surface learners. There are a proportion that seem to be taking surface approaches, and there are a proportion that are taking deep approaches. And actually there's a set of students in the middle that, not really in the middle, but there's a set of students that take what are called a strategic approach, which is actually they use whatever methods are appropriate at the time. And veterinary and medical students are actually, we know, very strategic. Mm. But what's interesting with the data collection is that that approach is not changing through the course. So if students are starting with a mainly surface approach, they're ending the course with mainly a surface approach, which is clearly of concern to us.
Okay, so you're therefore trying to encourage them to adopt deeper methods from an early stage. Is that successful at the moment? Or?
Well, there are. What's interesting, I think, about this is that although it's very clear what we would like, it's much less clear how we achieve what we would like.
Mm, okay.
And what some of the research that's been going on again over a number of years have shown is that the two really attacks that you can take on this, and I think you need to combine them. One is starting with where the students are at. And there was a very interesting paper by a chap called Gerald Groh. What he was showing was that if you take students who are very surface in their approach and you try and apply a deep method in your teaching for them, if you try and delegate responsibility to them, not only does it not work with that group, but they can actually become quite resistant. And in one case, he reported one of the students actually ended up hating him.
Right.
So it's not just it's difficult to do. But what he was suggesting was that we need to take these students step by step, and we need to gradually move them from surface approaches through to deep approaches. We can't leap that gap in one go.
I know that you're particularly interested in sort of various methods of electronically assisted learning to sort of facilitate this deep approach. So what are the main advantages that you see of them of using this electronically assisted learning versus traditional methods?
One of the areas that people would probably first think of immediately of electronic and web-based media would be, isn't it fantastic? We've got access to information and rapid access to information.
Mm.
That in itself is not particularly interesting to me, although it's obviously something that's happening and it gives us some potential for doing some interesting things. But what I think it also does is it introduces a much stronger idea to students that they have to judge the efficacy and the accuracy of content that they're finding online.
Yes.
And they would assume that going to the library, most students would assume that that would be accurate information. It's been through a peer review process. There's obviously a danger of thinking that for websites that are designed and developed and delivered by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So access to information in some ways I see is good and interesting because it starts us thinking about how students might judge the accuracy and how we develop those abilities. But for me, probably the most interesting aspect of the electronic side is actually in connecting people. So it's about communication and it's about collaboration. And when the web was originally designed, it was supposed to be a read-write system, and it very quickly got taken over just by a sort of read system.
Uh-huh.
And we're now quite rapidly returning to a read-write web system. And I think that brings a number of other opportunities which are interesting. And actually there was an interesting story in the news recently about connecting through technologies, especially mobile technologies. I don't know if you heard about the surgeon in Congo who had
right.
just arrived at a hospital station. There was a young boy who had had part of his arm removed because he was he damaged it in an incident. This surgeon was a vascular surgeon. He recognised the boy was actually in shock and his stump was infected, and he realised that the bone was infected.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that the only way of treating this boy and saving his life was to remove the rest of his arm, and in fact what they call a four-quarter removal. And he didn't know how to perform this procedure. He was a surgeon, but he didn't know how to perform the procedure, and all he had was a mobile phone.
Yeah.
And he contacted the person in the UK who does this procedure over and over again, and got two texts back that instructed him on the procedure. And he pondered it for 24 hours and drew lots of diagrams, he said, and then he decided to go ahead and save this boy's life. He only had a pint of blood, so being a vascular surgeon was actually the best thing he could be.
Mm.
But through two text messages, he managed to perform this procedure successfully and save the boy's life.
Okay,
which is an interesting.
It's quite a sort of simple application of technology, but it still did the job, I guess.
Very effective.
Yeah, so I mean, what I'm wondering is whether students are really enthusiastic about these sort of new modalities, in as much as there's the sort of gizmo effect, if you like, or not. I mean, how do you find them coping with these sorts of things?
What's interesting, I think, is that actually for the students coming into university now, these are not new technologies. Mm. They've grown up with them, and so for them it's part of their everyday lives. And there's been a talk of, you know, they are the digital natives and us older people are the digital immigrants. We have to learn how to use these new technologies, but actually for the students it's not new. But in some ways that avoids your question of enthusiasm, because actually what we're also finding is that everybody is different, and it's very easy to make an assumption that one technology will fit all, and clearly it doesn't. And some approaches are very effective for one person and very ineffective for another person. And part of our research is actually looking at what are those factors and how do those factors interact, because it can become quite complex. And I think we'll talk about a little bit of that in a moment with the VetConnect project. But basically, we have to be aware of those differences, and we have to take them into account when designing systems to ensure that actually we can engage different groups of students across the different areas that they're involved with.
Mm. So, I mean, you've already alluded to VetConnect, and I know that's one of your sort of key interests at the moment. So, I mean, what is the concept then behind VetConnect?
Well, initially, we started with a concept of recording learning in a clinical setting. And our hypothesis, if you like, was that actually, although students were spending vast amounts of time in the clinical setting, many of them probably weren't extracting a huge amount of learning from that time, or not as effectively extracting the learning as we thought they could.
Mm. So you're just referring to students following clinicians around in small groups, basically, with cases.
That's right. And if you think of when we still talk about seeing practice, and in some cases our fear is that students actually do exactly that. They stand in the corner and see someone else practicing,
mm-hmm.
which is fine for a little while, but not for 26 weeks of clinical experience. So what we were doing, our first exploration into this area was with a project called MyPad, and the idea was that students would record using a mobile device their clinical activities, and then that we would link those clinical activities back to their learning in the, if you like, the traditional teaching. Mm. And we would also look at linking them together.
So that would be using a PDA type device.
That's right. Yeah. So, in fact, Orange sponsored us and gave us 30 PDAs, personal digital assistants, I think, which were smartphones. They were quite capable devices, web accessible, wireless enabled, 3G enabled. I mean, 2 years ago, you know, this was quite advanced stuff, and that's another interesting thing of how fast the technology moves on.
Mm.
We learned a huge amount from that project, and what we were finding was some of these differences between students and their engagement, and a lot of that was around subtleties of how students compared what we were offering with it. All the other alternatives were there for them based on how they, what their capabilities were, if you like. So one of our students was a dyslexic student who actually found typing on the little keyboard was actually really useful for him, because he actually said his handwriting was actually quite difficult to read. He found it difficult to read himself.
Right.
And being able to type on the keyboard and send that into his own personal system meant that he could actually read it later on and search it.
Mm-hmm.
What we found with other students is that actually they found that pen and paper was much more efficient, even if they typed it up later, and they didn't like the fiddling keyboard. And we had students who said, you know, this new device is actually too small, and we had students who said it's actually too big.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those comparisons were, we were trying to draw out of the research what's really going on here, and how, what comparisons are students making, and where's the niche for this sort of application in the clinical setting? In some senses, the sort of, if you like, that led us into the concept for VetConnect, which is very much about trying to support a deeper approach to learning, which is not just about recording your activity, but it's about comparing what you're doing with other people. It's about learning from other people's learning, and it's about going back and reflecting on what you have done and what you've learned from that.
Again, so this is an evolution of the MyPad experiment, and basically, again, sort of in a clinical setting, trying to get more out of the cases that the students are seeing, basically.
That's right. And, I mean, one example might be that, we can talk about this in terms of fitting into some of the clinical rotations, but... I mean, VetConnect is a system for it's in the name, but the primary function is to connect students together rather than to create an individual recording system. It actually does both, but the connecting, I think, is the important thing, and the potential for collaboration is the important thing there.
Okay, so what's the sort of hardware and software requirements then to run this sort of system? I know this is your baby, really, Jeff, isn't it?
Yeah, so VetConnect's a web application, so basically you can access it from any web browser, so you don't really need a powerful machine or anything like that. From the mobile point of view, actually MyPad, you had to use a smart type of device that had a browser and something like that. Mm-hmm. Now with VetConnect, all we're using is SMS and MMS to send information in. So pretty much all phones are supporting SMS.
Yes.
If you do have picture messaging on the phone, and you can also send pictures in using MMS.
Right, so you're taking photographs of cases and sending them on straight.
Yeah. So the coverage of mobile phones that support it is now sort of vast compared to the MyPad application. So
how does this sort of process then, using these sort of handheld devices, fit into the sort of everyday routine of the clinical rotations?
We've been actually looking at and researching various approaches. And one of the things we found out of doing that is that actually every rotation is different. And it has different demands on students, and it has different expectations. And that's quite important in terms of how we look at using VetConnect in those situations. We can't take a one-size-fits-all approach. But part of what we've done in exploring that is actually Jeff went into the small animal medicine rotation and shadowed two of the students there.
So it was a small animal medicine. We had two very nice volunteers that said that I could follow them around. So using my phone, every time they were going around the hospital seeing their cases, I was actually doing what I would have thought the student would be doing in that scenario, using VetConnect. It worked well. I was using an iPhone, so I had the capabilities of the wireless network, which is in the QMH, which was helpful. Unfortunately, the QMH doesn't have a very good mobile signal, so you would need a type of device that has the wireless to use it. What we did do, though, was install card readers in the open access machines in the QMH for the students, so they could use a type of phone that has a memory card in it to take pictures and then go up to the access rooms where the computers are and just pull the pictures out that they've taken and add them to VetConnect.
Okay.
That was actually quite interesting, because our original thinking was that actually what students would be doing would be using their mobile devices, as Jeff explained, to take pictures as they're investigating their cases, and then they would use those pictures to firstly enhance the discussion rounds, so sort of almost like you could almost do a virtual round type of discussion. But then having hit this mobile signal, we went, okay, so how can we get that data in another way? We use card readers, but actually that changes the whole dynamic, because what then happens is students collect a series of pictures during the day, and then they spend half an hour in the evening putting those pictures in. But what they do is they don't upload them one at a time, as they would do if they were doing it at the time. They put them all into a case, and they do a case write-up. So just by making that, if you like, what might be a subtle change, we actually get a completely different output, which is not related to capturing my... It's partly capturing what I'm doing as I'm going along, but it's then packaging it, if you like, in a different way later on.
It's not quite sort of contemporaneous.
Exactly. Yeah. So the dynamic changed, and the sort of potential for collaboration also changed. It's one of the features that Jeff's included in VetConnect is an ability for students to say, I'm interested in anything that gets posted to the Small Animal Medicine Notice Board. Mm-hmm. And actually, if anybody posts anything there, what I want to know is by an email or by a text message what was posted. So you can imagine students working on different cases and being notified of other uploads by other students at the same time, and they can then come back together later on.
So these are sort of general electronic notice board accessible by all the sort of staff and students.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So how do you think then this sort of altered methodologies are enhancing the students' learning? I mean, how do you assess how they are improving, if you like, as a result of these?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's actually very early days in trying to extract some of that. But what we are doing is looking in a qualitative way. We're doing a qualitative analysis, if you like, of the inputs that students are making into the system. I'm looking for evidence of what we're hoping will come out of this sort of process for students, which is more critical thinking, clinical reasoning, comparing across cases. Actually, you know, one of the original, if you like, requests from Small Animal Medicine was to get students to be working their cases out more effectively. And so some of those are easier to research than others. And certainly we can look at how effective they are at working their cases up. When it comes to being more critical in their thinking, we have to look outside of perhaps the immediate return and look to more of how the college is assessing those capabilities and whether we're helping to improve those. But we do a lot of talking to the students as well, and of course that's incredibly effective at finding out what's going on from there. The other area that was actually at the beginning we thought would be a really useful process is actually back more to an administrative process, where actually one of the difficulties in the hospital is around communication. And new cases come in, the clinician is notified of the new case, but then they have to find the students.
Mm.
And so what happens is that actually students end up waiting around for cases to arrive and be notified of those when they probably could be off doing more useful things. And one of the facilities in VetConnect is that ability to have a notification that something's happened. And if the mobile signal was working in the QMH, we could have used that within the QMH.
Amazing.
We can use that outside the QMH, but we can't use it within, which was slightly frustrating.
Okay, and do you envisage this technology, or are you already thinking about sort of expanding this for a sort of lifelong learning type scenario as well?
Yeah, so one of the areas that we've been discussing with the farm animal rotation, in actually with the clinical training scholars, is using VetConnect for them as part of their, if you like, their portfolio. And actually, one of the interesting things about all this studying and researching the area is that while we've got students on site and we can do much more detailed analysis of work on site, probably students who are off-site are much more tuned in to try to connect back with their fellow students. So clinical training scholars who are scattered over farms around the east of England would potentially benefit much more from seeing what other students are doing. Mm-hmm. Whereas the students in the Queen Mother Hospital actually can mostly turn around to each other and say, what are you up to? Now, that doesn't necessarily happen, but it feels like it should happen. So there's this, it's another one of those factors that affects engagement, I think, going back to your other question. You know, if this system is giving you something that you can't get through other means, then potentially you're much more likely to engage with it. So that's one area of the farm animal. But we're also looking at how we just started thinking about, rather than working directly with students in on-site rotations, perhaps we can link in their work out in vet practices when they're doing their EMS, their extramural studies, and can we get them to prepare better for the rotation when they come on-site? So can we link them in with the clinicians on-site? you like, while they're out in veterinary practice, and we can we get them capturing and building on their learning better before they start on the intramural rotations.
Okay, presumably by the same token, and I guess this will be applicable especially to students who've sort of recently graduated, they could maintain a virtual network, you know, in their new practices in different parts of the country and continue the process.
That's right. So, very much part of being a vet in practice in your first year is, for many, is an isolating experience.
Absolutely.
And certainly through, you know, RVC for life, there's this pull back into the college, and I think Vet Connect could fit quite nicely into that sort of umbrella.
Okay, so what are the sort of current priorities then? How are you progressing things in the near future?
So one of the areas is still looking in the local hospitals and looking at other rotations. So the equine rotation is doing some interesting things with actually some getting students to create PowerPoint presentations during their rotation, which they present at the end of the week. But Justin Perkins identified that actually there were there's a lot of useful learning in some of those, which tends to get lost. And he's interested in capturing just those presentations and making those available in the system. Now, at the moment, that's been done through email, but we envisage at some point that actually that could be a responsibility of students after the presentation and after the feedback, that they would adapt their presentation and upload it into Vet Connect, which then people can search through and find those pieces of learning. That's one area. What we're also interested in is whether we can link some of the hospital record system data into Vet Connect. Because one of the issues that students have raised is we have to enter data into the hospital record system, but actually we can't get it out. And it's not for our learning purpose, really, that data is being entered. Although, obviously, they learn as part of putting that in. So can we, within Vet Connect, provide a view onto that data that would allow students to say, these are the cases that I've been working on, but these are the things that I'm really learning about them. And this is my working differentials list. This is what I'm planning to do next with these cases. And these are my pictures that I've collected of these cases that remind me of those cases. So sort of linking those two systems and not trying to repeat data entry, but using that linking to make both systems more powerful, because then students are much more essentially motivated to put effective and accurate data into the CRIS system, because it benefits them directly as well. And one other area that's I think of real interest is whether you can use systems like Vet Connect to actually collect epidemiological data, not for an in-depth research study, but if you're sending students out around the country, actually one of the things that they will be doing by using the system is giving you some data that could be interesting epidemiologically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, it sounds altogether like a potentially very valuable way of linking in sort of learning at university with the transition into practice, and then sort of longer-term learning. So that sounds very encouraging. And it just reminds me to say thank you very much, Kim and Jeff, for your expertise today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all very much for listening to this latest edition of the RVC podcast. As ever, if you have any comments or suggestions with regard to the podcasting, then please feel free to contact us at podcast@rvc.ac.uk. And I hope very much we'll have your company again next time for the next edition. Thanks and goodbye.